Tuesday, November 26th, as we continue during Thanksgiving week, we were joined by a former NFL player in the 4 o'clock hour with his thoughts on the current Colin Kaepernick situation, and then Tim Phelan stopped by from the Connecticut Retail Merchants Association to preview Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Small Business Saturday, and in general, the upcoming holiday buying season.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Hey, how are you? We're 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Of course, it's NFL season. That's always to be said this time of the year. But the league is, well, it's always in the news now. It's a 24-7 operation now with the NFL Network and sports gaming coming on. And also, we have the constant stories out there now about the Myles Garrett incident a couple of weeks ago and the whole ongoing Colin Kaepernick thing. And to weigh in on this and tell us about his life during and after football, the author of The Man Behind the Helmet and the God of Second Chances, NFL veterans spend parts of several seasons with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, among other squads in his career. Frank D. Murphy is with us. Frank, Paul here in Bridgeport. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Paul?
I'm well, Frank. Well, I tell you, I was looking at your resume here. You made the NFL eventually. You did not go to a big school. You were a JUCO player and a community college guy, right?
Right, yes. I went to junior college and won the Junior College Player of the Year, which is the highest trophy in junior college. And, yeah, I went that route and then ended up going to Kansas State.
How tough was it to go the JUCO route before you made it bigger?
I think it's tougher because there's so many people hungry going that route, in the junior college rank and trying to get, back to the D1 or get to D1 if they haven't already been. So, yeah, it was tough, but I think, with hard work, dedication, and focus, you can do anything. So that's how I took it.
And now you have become a motivational speaker, Frank, correct? Television, movies, what's going on with your life in that scenario?
Man, I've been blessed, but it comes with getting in the lab, working hard. We're doing an educational stage play that goes to middle school, high school, to show my life story derived from my book, The Man Behind the Helmet. And we're working on the movie as well now here in Atlanta, Georgia. So a lot of great things going on. TV show starts up next year, going to the 2020, talking about just life behind the scenes that people don't really know about athletes and things of that nature. So they get a firsthand overview and educational moment from me and my guest that I would bring on and my host that would be there. So, yeah, we're doing a lot of great things, brother.
Your book has a foreword in it by a guy who's won a Super Bowl. We see him every week on NBC, Tony Dungy. What's your relationship like with Coach Dungy?
Great. He's a great mentor of mine, lead by example, one of the greatest men and coaches I ever met. I played for Coach Dungy with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So, he brought me in there and gave me an opportunity, and I really appreciate it. So, just a great overall guy, family guy as well. Nothing but good things about Coach Tony Dungy.
You know, what's interesting, Frank, I hear this from you now and other guys that I've talked to in pro football, and you hear about it from people in the media. Tony, in fact, my producer here, Aaron, said he was given Tony Dungy's book by his pastor at his church. It's amazing the great things, I guess, the people don't really know about Coach Dungy other than his coaching and his media work. I guess this guy's quite an individual, huh?
Yeah, he's one of a kind. I can tell you that, man. I'll never forget we was on the field, and you know how you go to different teams, or you hear this about this coach and that coach.
Yeah.
So we have a bad half. You know, that was my first time with the Bucs. We just had a bad half. Didn't play good. Didn't use our fundamentals. Wasn't disciplined. So we got into halftime. I'm thinking like, man, we're finna get chewed out. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, boy, you know how coaches are nice, but when they get mad, they go off. And Coach Dungy was the same coach all the time. Came in, pointed out the points, didn't raise his voice, put the responsibility on us as players and men, and you either do it or you don't. And that we love playing for a coach like that, that 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 you know that goes all out for you, but also treats you like a man.
Now, did you overlap with John Gruden? Correct. So you played for him too, right? Boy,
yes,
what was the contrast like between Tony Dungy and Chucky that you played for?
night and day. They different personalities. It was night and day.
That's just night and day.
Yeah. I give you the short. That's night and day.
That's
short, but night and day, you know.
What is the message behind the man behind the helmet? Why should folks go out and grab that book?
Well, I think a lot of times we just look at people behind, we just look at their helmet, and we put all these different scenarios, these different personalities on them, or we think they this way or that way, but you really don't get to know the person till you know what's behind the helmet. This book gives you opportunity not only to learn about me, but other things that I did that took place in my life behind the helmet and what helped me make myself successful in the things that I do and make me a better man. So my life story is the man behind the helmet because people don't know us. They really don't. They think they do. We just living out a fantasy for all the fans. Why they call it fantasy football. That's why fans are fans, because we're living out a fantasy for them.
Yeah.
So they kind of forget that you're a human being. They kind of forget that you're a person with feelings. You know what I mean? A person that
works
your butt off every day to keep your job. It's like they do. You know what I mean? So this gives them an opportunity to really see the man behind the helmet, which is myself.
You know, Frank, I've always thought, and by the way, the guest is Frank Murphy, former NFL player, author of The Man Behind the Helmet. You know, Frank, and you probably experienced this, you have so many people, Frank, especially with the NFL, because it's only once a week. They may have had a lousy week at work. They may be having trouble with their man or their woman or their kids, or they're having trouble paying the bills. But a lot of times, you guys who were and still are in the National Football League, that's like the only bright spot, right, they have during the week is sitting down for that 3 hours in front of a set or painting their faces, right, and going out to the stadium. And you must have looked up a few times at those full stands and said, wow, there's really a connection here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always a good connection. And you're speaking about the fans, correct?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Yeah. I think it's a big connection, but college is even more of a big connection when it comes to fans.
Yeah.
Got grandma, granddad, uncles that went to that college. So the history of being at certain colleges is just, it's unbelievable. So yeah, you definitely feel connected to the fans. You just want them to get to know you instead of the football player, because the football player is not real and not a realistic thing that'll last long. So they get to know all of you. That's what you kind of want them to get to know more about you than just the football player, quote unquote, whoever that is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're not an automaton. And do you think that's getting, Frank, do you think that's getting better with more media coverage right now and these features and NFL Network and all the social media now? Do you think players today are a little bit more well-known among fans than maybe when you broke in as a rookie?
Yeah, I definitely do. It's just so much. Social media is the number one thing that really puts, you know, fans get to follow you. The fantasy football is more popular than ever. That helps out. Of course, TV has got more visible because we get more games on broadcast now than it was back then. We always had a lot of games broadcast, but more and more come, so they get a better deal each 4 or 5 years. So yeah, I think it's more visible now than it was when I was out there, definitely.
And we continue with our guest. A few more minutes here. One more segment with former NFL player, author of The Man Behind the Helmet and The God of Second Chances. Now he's a motivational speaker, taking his story to stage play, also coming to movies, done TV as well, Frank D. Murphy. Frank, well, let me ask you, the whole Colin Kaepernick scenario, this has been going on for a couple of years, took another couple, a kind of a weird turn the last couple of weeks with not going to the NFL Combine, going to this high school. Give this to me from a player's point of view, you know, like inside the room, what do you think the guys and players are really saying about this?
Well, I think players are just saying there's no trust there. You know, once a lawsuit has been happened between anybody, no matter if it's a company or individual, there's no trust there. It's hard to do any type of relationship or any type of I'm going to help you, you help me, or I'm going to do this, you do that, when there's no trust, when you Cap sued the NFL, and he had a right to, and he won because it was true.
Yeah.
He was light ball. So, yeah. So, but when the response to that is that the NFL now is going to try to protect themselves. Owners going to try to protect themselves. Owners don't even want to mess with it because they, if they bring them in, it bring a lot of media attention. But not only that, will he sue us if we make a mistake? You know,
Yeah.
You know, so it's a lot of that's why the owners wasn't bringing them in. So what the NFL said, well, you know what? Can I get all y'all together? Send somebody out, check them out. I understand y'all concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Let's y'all get a chance to interview him, talk to him. Then you can see for yourself if you think he'll do that. You know, so the NFL, you know, did their part, and I think Cap chose what he thought was wise for him based on the circumstances that he didn't want to put himself in a bad position because there was no trust there. So there it goes. There it goes again. So
yeah.
I think this is the last time we'll hear them two trying to work together. I think this is the last push, and I don't think we'll hear anything else about this again.
Were you, Frank, were you surprised? Because to me, this change in Kaepernick, you know, he had those couple of really good seasons with the Niners, almost led him to a Super Bowl title, and all of a sudden this, and I understand there was stuff going on with the cops and African Americans around the country, but I was kind of surprised at the flip in him almost overnight. Did that surprise you or not?
No, you didn't see it coming because I don't think he talked to people about it. He talked to lawyers.
Yeah.
He talked to armed forces. He met with a whole bunch of armed forces. He talked to a lot of people about and educated himself. This has been going on for years until mm-hmm. he got to a place where he felt like, man, I don't, you know, you got to remember he forfeited $20-something million that he didn't have to forfeit.
Yeah.
He did that, not the team. The team couldn't do it. So he counseled that option of getting his $20 million, which if they would have cut him, he still would have got paid. But he did that, and he decided to take a knee for, you know, that purpose, you know. So, I mean, I told people, you know, when you do stuff legal, there's what can you say about it? But, you know, the media twisted it and said it was about this, the armed force. It wasn't nothing like that. I think everybody knows that knows anything about how stuff get twisted and why I get twisted. You know, and I brought people to their attention. Tim Tebow did the same thing
Yeah. For
his reasons. The same exact thing for his reasons of why he didn't want to do it. But you didn't hear nothing about it. You know, and that's the sad thing when you see another player do it and it happened to be another race, take a knee for his own reasons why he didn't want to stand for the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody says nothing. Then he takes a knee and he says this is why he's standing. Everybody twists the story, make it about the arm, you know, make it about, oh, now you're not, you know, standing for when he got family members that's in the army. I just think that's how the narrative goes, you know.
What do you think, Frank, what do you think the dynamic was in the locker room there? You know, a lot of people, as we talked about before, you want people to see, again, behind the helmet of the players. Players have emotions. Frank, they have feelings. When Cap did what he did, do you think there was open talk about it in the locker room? Do you think guys that didn't agree with him would have said anything? Or do you think it was kind of like, hey, let's just every man be himself, whatever your feelings are, you know, let's just keep it to ourselves? Or is every room different?
Well, I think every team is different because some teams, like, you know, handle it how we've been handling everything on our own. You know, when Tim Tebow took a knee, it was handled the way they handled it.
Yeah.
It was no big deal. You know, so I just think that's a real tricky, you know, when you're dealing with organizations. You got to handle that thing the way if it's not in the rule book, if he's not breaking the law, you can't dictate and try to tell somebody what to do if it's not in your rule book. If there's nothing that he's doing in your rule book, he's never been in trouble before. He never did nothing wrong. That wasn't wrong what he did. That was within his right, just like it was within Tebow's right. It was in his right. What can you possibly do or say? Why would you? I mean, the rest is just really the media blow it up how they want. But, I mean, the team behind the scenes, I think everybody had their own opinion, but they're gonna support their brother. You know, in the locker room, they're not going to turn their back on their brother. No matter if they don't like it or not, they're going to stand with their brother. And that's a little bit more thicker than just kicking them to the curb like, you know, fans do or whatever the case may be.
Do you think he should be playing now? Do you think he wants to play now? Or Do you think that his new role is strictly, and for lack of a better term, Frank, I grew up with Muhammad Ali, you know, when he walked away from the heavyweight crown and he couldn't, you know, even box for a few years, or people like, say, Jim Brown, who was very much of an activist. Do you think that's his role from now on?
I think he have somewhat took that on. I don't think that's something that he planned to do. I think he wanted to, you know, live his truth, but it grew like that. But I think he's going to live his truth now for real, for real. You know, how sometimes you live your truth is at certain times, you know. But now I think this is his truth. He can't run from it. This is his platform. So it's like you can't back up now. You all in. So I think also he wants to live his truth as long as he's not breaking no laws or breaking no rules within the NFL. I think he want to be free to do what every man in America want to do. They want to live freely within the laws and the rules and regulations, and that's what he's doing. But I just think that the drama that comes behind it is a little too much when you haven't played in 3 years. It's a little too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
I think
that's
what he's facing now.
In about the 30 seconds we have left, your thoughts on the Myles Garrett thing. You know, it's an emotional game. It's a violent game that you guys played and guys still play. Things get out of hand, don't they? I mean, we're not apologizing for what Myles Garrett thing did, but it's an emotional game, isn't it?
It's an emotional game, but, you know, when it gets that's out of the line. So, you know, you take somebody's helmet off and then hit them with it, that's something in the locker rooms across America from high school on up. That's just a written code. You just don't do that. I don't care how mad you are, what you're going through. You don't hit another player with a helmet. If you take his helmet off and throw it, and I mean, that's bad enough, but that's right there on the lines. But you cross the line when you swing that helmet and hit somebody that don't have a helmet on, no matter what happens. You just don't. That's just not how we play the game. And I think he knows that. Every team knows that. Every locker room knows that. So he dropped the ball on that, and he's getting his punishment, which he definitely deserves his punishment, and he knows it. And that's what I would say about that.
Frank, once again, the book is called The Man Behind the Helmet and the God of Second Chances, forward by Tony Dungy, the author, and our guest, Frank Murphy. Frank, where can we also find you TV, and you said movie-wise as well? That's coming up?
Yes. Go to my website, frankdmurphy.com. frankdmurphy.com. That's www.frankdmurphy.com, and you'll get all the information on there. And you know, and you can write if you want speaking engagements, all those good things. So go to my website, frankdmurphy.com.
All right, frankdmurphy.com. Check it out, folks. Former NFL player, motivational speaker, TV, movies. He does it all. Frank D. Murphy. Frank, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye. There you go. frankdmurphy.com.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Past 5 o'clock, fourth and final hour of our get-together here on WICC 600 on the radio and online, of course, at WICC600.com, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And we welcome back to the program here. We've had him on a couple times before. I've talked to him throughout the years. Tim Phelan joins us, who heads the Connecticut Retail Merchants Association. Tim, the big week is coming up, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing good, Paul. Yeah, it's here.
Yeah, Black Friday coming up after the holiday break on Thursday. Although, Tim, I know it's a controversial thing, but there are some stores, I guess, that will be open on Thursday itself, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. There are some that have chosen to remain open on Thursday, while a bunch have decided not to. Most of this is back to what consumers are looking for, and in some cases, consumers like to go out the night of Thanksgiving, and so retailers want to accommodate. Some retailers have decided they don't want to do that.
Yeah, Tim, is it true? I guess people say, well, what's Black Friday? Why'd you get that name? And is it true, Tim, that for some retailers, at least, this Friday and this weekend will determine whether or not they, in fact, finish in the black, as in black ink, as in profitable for the current year?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the term really means the holiday season, not necessarily the one day.
Yeah.
So it is an important time of the year for a vast majority of retailers. This is the time when they do really have an opportunity to turn a profit. Now, over the years, the way shopping habits have changed, the people are doing more purchasing throughout the year. It may not be as important as it was, you know, say a generation or so ago, but still for many, many retailers, this is the time of the year.
You know, Tim, I had a friend of mine, we were chatting on Facebook the other night, and he's always been a local guy. He's very strong, and, you know, he doesn't like to go to the big box stores. He'll buy occasionally from Amazon or something like that, but he's very big, this buddy of mine, and in going to, say, his local stores, his local shoe store, his local men's stores. So I guess this is an opportunity here, Tim, not just to make money for your members, but to show what, I guess, for lack of a better term, Tim, a personal touch here, what that can mean to the shopping experience. And yeah, you may pay a little bit more instead of getting it online, but you have somebody you can actually, you know, talk to face to face here.
Well, yeah. Well, first of all, we appreciate your buddy doing that, shopping local. We would encourage everybody to shop local in all parts of Connecticut. I know in your listening audience and in Fairfield County, there are tremendous local retailers up and down the main streets. And I think we're seeing a trend of more and more consumers going back to stores and going into have shopping experiences. Now that some of the laws and regulations regarding online sales have leveled off, the fact that people can go into a store and look at the product that they're going to buy, they can touch it and they can size it up, it has a great deal of appeal because, you know, the advantage that you used to have if you bought something online with it not having to pay sales taxes has gone away. But the local retailer really does is really a part of the community and the fabric of the community. And you will probably, when you're in that store, have a chance to see the owner, talk to him. You'll get some good expertise on the products that you're buying. And you may pay a little bit more, you may not. You'd be surprised. But most importantly, you're going to feel a sense of community when you're in that local retail store. So we would encourage folks to do that.
Tim, you just mentioned about different laws that have been passed both on the state and federal level. So now with taxation, with sales tax, with taxes on, say, digital services, as they've been kind of tweaked and updated, is your group happy now with the overall state, Tim, of taxation? And do they feel that the, as you mentioned, the playing field is a little more level now?
Yeah, with respect to the online retailer versus brick and mortar retailer, we feel better. We feel like we're in a better place than we were a couple of years ago. Would we like the overall sales tax rate to go down? You know, absolutely. We'd like the exemption levels to come back. So there are some things we would like to see happen, but with respect to online sales, we're happy with where that is. But we do think that. You know, if the Connecticut economy continues to improve and, it's a whole another talk show, so to speak, yeah, of what to do with surplus monies, maybe we do think consumers should get some sort of relief that we've seen sales tax increases go up. We've seen clothing exemption and other exemptions go away. So if to the extent that there's surplus dollars left in the state coffers, consumers should be first in line to see that relief.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, the sales tax free week, that didn't happen this year, did it?
No, the sales tax free week still happens.
Oh, it did happen. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still on the books. There was some talk that it would be,
okay.
Every sort of version of a budget that the legislature looked at, maybe in one version of that, it was eliminated, but in the end, it was restored. The clothing exemption allowance within the sales tax holiday could be higher.
Oh, okay.
$100. But again, we're happy with the sales tax holiday.
Yeah.
It's a good opportunity for people to get out and shop in Connecticut, but here's another opportunity for them to do it is this holiday season. There's no reason to leave Connecticut to do your holiday shopping. We have all the major retailers, and we have great local retailers as well.
Hey, Tim, during the week of the sales tax exemption, you said that did, in fact, happen this year. I was wrong. Do a lot of retailers see a definable spike in that week? Is the exemption still that big of a draw for some people to do their shopping in that week or not?
Well, yeah, the short answer is yes, it is, and it's for a couple of reasons. One is that there's a good retailers do a good job of promoting the sales tax-free week. And the other reason is the timing of it is still timed just so back-to-school shopping begins. So we like the sales tax-free week. We built it into our promotional schedules. We think consumers respond well to it, and we do see an uptick that week.
Coming up to 18 past the 5 right here, WICC 600. Like Mr. Big Voice said, the guest is a guy who looks over what the retailers in the state are thinking, big and small. Tim Phelan from the Connecticut Retail Merchants Association. Tim, along with the dollar and cents aspect of what you guys do, what you guys and gals do, obviously your members, your associates there are often watching what goes on in the General Assembly and what does not happen. What are you hearing from your merchant members and retailers about generally what they're feeling about the state here and some of the mandates that did get passed, some that didn't? What do you think their overall temperature is right now?
Well, I think overall, every retailer in Connecticut is rooting for Connecticut's economy to be stronger. A strong economy means consumers with confidence to go out and shop. And so they look at things and say, how does the General Assembly react to things that will make Connecticut's economy stronger? And so issues that we watch always not only just impact our own business, but the general business climate. Does the General Assembly have a strategy for recruitment of new companies to move to Connecticut or to retain those companies that are already here? Does the General Assembly have a strategy to help lower overall business costs? Does the General Assembly have a strategy to help consumers feel more confident and have more dollars in their wallets to go out and reinvest that dollars into the economy through purchases at our store? So I think that's the number one priority for us is really just to make sure that the business climate in Connecticut's economy is strong.
Is Connecticut still considered, Tim, an expensive place to do business? You know, you hear about this all the time, and some critics come back and say, well, no, it really isn't. People should stop whining. But is it still considered excessively expensive to operate a business in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to refute that it's not. I think Connecticut is an expensive state to do business in. I think it's, many consumers would tell you it's an expensive state to live in. So I think it is. But, you know, there are offsets to that as well that you have to look at. What's our quality of life and things that go along with that? But I think if you're just looking at it from the dollars and cents, it's kind of hard to argue that it's not an expensive state.
What are you hearing, Tim? And we had the first installment of the minimum wage increase. We went from $10.10 an hour to $11 an hour, and we'll be going up a dollar a year, well, roughly every 11 months or so for the next 4 years. Are you hearing that this is a burden already, or is it going to become worse as these other $1 increments click in the next 11 months or so over an 11-month periods?
Yeah, I think we have definitely heard that there's concern, especially among smaller independent retailers, that the increase in the cost of labor in this regard, the minimum wage increases, will put a strain on businesses. It'll force them to make decisions about hiring and how many people they may want to hire may be reduced because of that. We're grateful that it's been spread out over a period of time that allows us to you know, get adjusted to it. But again, it's without a doubt, the increase in that cost will have an impact on some retailers, particularly smaller independent retailers, some of their decision making.
Excellent. Well, Tim Phelan, Tim, thank you. We appreciate the time, folks. Get out, buy local. Connecticut retailers are always out there. They're ready to help. CRMAOnline.com, the Connecticut Retail Merchants Association. Tim, good to talk to you. We'll chat down the line. Appreciate it.
Okay, looking forward to it, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. All right, folks, get out and buy your stuff local.